Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode of Kitchen Club is kindly sponsored by Exhale Coffee, the first specialty coffee in the UK to be sourced and roasted for health. We're very excited by this coffee and all the research into it, showing that just one cup of Exhale Coffee has been tested to have the same antioxidant power of 12 punnets of blueberries, 55 oranges, or 1.2 kilograms of kale. That is pretty amazing.
Exhale's unique process is designed to lock in the natural plant chemicals and involves 9 different tests at independent laboratories across Europe. Amazingly, it is free from any nasties that you might find in other coffees, including mycotoxins, pesticides, toxins, and heavy metals. Plus, if you're a decaf drinker, you'll be pleased to know that it's the same as the regular coffee, but has been decaffeinated using the chemical-free mountain water process, which uses only the purest spring water. The magic is all in the sourcing and roasting of this coffee to bring out more of coffee's healthy compounds.
It's also absolutely delicious and tastes just as good as other specialty grade coffee. So if you would like to try Exhale Coffee, you can use code CLUB40 for 40% off your first bag in a subscription, plus free delivery. So head to www.exhalecoffee.com to find out more and enjoy.
Hello and welcome back to Kitchen Club with me, Serena Louth, and my babe of a friend, Sarah Malcolm.
Kitchen Club is the weekly podcast that brings you conversations from the kitchen table. Each week, we have a brilliant new guest, a new area of expertise to get stuck into, plus a new recipe, which is created using our guests' 3 favorite ingredients.
Today's guest is a particularly special one who I have wanted to have on the podcast for a very, very long time. It is our very own Sarah Malcolm, aka the co-host of this podcast. We thought it would be really nice to interview each other and share more about what we do. So let me tell you a bit about Sarah. As her bio says, Sarah is a yoga teacher, co-host of Kitchen Club, aka the best podcast ever, and founder of At Home with Sarah. At age 24, Sarah was diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome, which transformed her lifestyle as she played with ways in which she could help her diagnosis through diet, exercise, and living more mindfully. As a teacher, Sarah weaves her connection to the practice into her teaching style with a playfulness on encouraging her students to find a personal practice that feels good for their bodies rather than looks a certain way, and to move in a way that's honest to what they've got going on physically, mentally, and emotionally, and to let that guide their movement.
This is strange. So here is me on Kitchen Club.
Hello, Sarah, and welcome to your own podcast.
Oh my gosh. Hi, Serena. This is quite wild, isn't it?
It feels a little bit weird, to be honest. Normally we split the questions and we have little colour coding, and now it's just all in my colour and it's a bit intense.
Although I've got green for ingredients and recipe.
That wasn't intentional. How does it feel to be a guest on your very own podcast?
It feels strange. I feel slightly nervous.
I feel quite nervous. I do.
You've already hosted one episode this season, though, so You're a seasoned pro.
I'm basically Ellen DeGeneres now.
Yes, you are, Serena.
Or Oprah.
Yes, you are. You are Ellen.
Shall we dive in?
Let's dive in.
Would you like to tell everybody what your three favourite ingredients are, please, Sarah?
Yes. So this was so hard. And listeners, I think you all know, we've kind of toyed with this before, haven't we? Asking each other what ours would be. And I still hadn't come up with my own answer. Serena asked me and she was very cemented on hers. But I have gone for mushrooms.
Delish.
Sweet potato.
Delish.
I mean, both quite basic, if I'm honest, but you just...
Staples.
Yeah, staples. And then I have gone for lime pickle.
Oh my God, my favourite. I love lime pickle.
It is just one of those things that I always have to have in the fridge. Always.
It's quite addictive, I think.
Unbelievable. But do you like preserved lemons and stuff like that?
Heaven.
Yeah.
Heaven.
I feel like you either love them or hate.
I didn't know what to do with a preserved lemon for a long time.
I still don't know what to do, really, to be honest.
I make a nice... There's an Ottolenghi slow-cooked courgette thing that has preserved lemon in that's delicious. But preserved lemon does just taste like lime pickle.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
That, like, salty, sour... Oh, yum. So this is what you always ask people. Is there any particular reason why you've chosen those three?
Okay. Sweet potato, I think, if you've got sweet potato in your house, you can go anywhere. You can make anything. And if there's sweet potato on the menu, it's probable that I'll have it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, I just think it can be really tasty, like roasted sweet potato. I just think is delicious. I know you are not a sweet potato girl.
Would you choose normal fries or sweet potato fries?
Oh, if I'm in a restaurant, probably normal, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I just like how I do my sweet potato wedges, like bit of cinnamon, oil, salt, bit of chili. Divine.
And because people order them in a restaurant because they think it's a healthy option, yeah. But they forget they're still fries.
Yeah, exactly. I remember when I was like uber healthy stage and was ordering, it was like when sweet potato fries just came out,
yeah.
You know, and I learned that they were actually cooked like three times more than normal chips. And I was like, right, that's it. Can't eat them. But oh my gosh, that's so delicious.
Just like a little oil sponge.
Yeah, yeah, basically are.
Okay,
mushrooms, just yum. You can, the texture, the taste, just delicious. Yummy and delicious are my go-to words for these three ingredients. And then lime pickle, I just think makes anything, any curry. I just couldn't have a curry without lime pickle.
Mm.
And I just think it's something that really goes like pop in your mouth. Like, oh yeah, that makes my mouth just do wild things. And it's funny because I'm quite particular about my lime pickle.
Okay, tell me.
It has to be Pataks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. And I've tried others and they're just a bit too like...
I think it needs to be quite spicy.
Yeah. 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 Agreed.
So I actually haven't made you lime pickle today, but when I worked for Delicious Sienna, we did a recipe for her third cookbook where we made lime pickle, which it was different. It was more like a little like side chutney thing. It was yummy, but I think I just like it from a jar.
Yeah. You can't go wrong.
You can't beat it.
Lime pickle. But actually, I tell you, one of the best lime pickles I've ever had was actually on a flight to Mumbai. And I was with my two best friends and they were asleep and we got served probably one of the best curries I've ever had.
On the aeroplane,
yeah. It was like this small plane and they were asleep and they like put their meals down in front of them. And I said to the girls, I kind of woke them up and said, do you want your food? And they were like, no, no, no. I started digging into mine and thought, oh my God, this is amazing. So I ate both of them. It was the best lime pickle ever. So thank you, Mumbai Airlines.
Oh, I love that. That's brilliant.
So do you want to tell me what you've made me?
Oh, yeah, of course. I was like ready to move on to the next question. You know what I've made you because we just had it. I've made you a sweet potato and mushroom burger. in a brioche bun. It was meant to have paneer, but my local shop didn't have any paneer, so we're having halloumi, which arguably is better, maybe. Yeah. With some spiced spinach and a yogurty, lime pickly, dippy, saucy vibe. Loads of fresh coriander. What did you think?
Oh my gosh, it was absolutely divine. So good. It's just like heaven in a bun, wrapped up.
Not wrapped.
Put on top of each other, squished in a bun.
And it is the hottest day, probably the hottest day of the year. And we are sat eating hot, spicy, Indian-flavoured burgers, sweating our faces off.
But they'd be such a good one for a barbecue as well.
Veggie barbecue.
Yeah, really nice. Really nice.
I thought of it because there's a brilliant place in Brixton called Bubba G's that do, they're called Bangra Burgers, and they have this like paneer patty, and it's so good. It's actually so spicy, it kind of makes your eyes water. But that was my inspo.
Thank you, darling.
It was so well
divine. And also fried paneer, so great.
Delish.
So great. Thank you. What a treat.
So we're going to talk about food a little bit to start, because this did originally start off as a foodie podcast, and I feel like over the year, it has got progressively less and less foodie. So I just have some quick little food questions for you. Have you always loved food? Were you always, I was going to say always a greedy gal, were you always someone who like really loved their food?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've never been like quote unquote foodie. Had some weird things as a child growing up. I mean, my favourite sandwich was salami and cottage cheese in a sandwich together. Like that was my staple packed lunch box.
Nice.
But I always got excited by food, and I loved eating out even as a child. I mean, I've definitely said this on the podcast that I was in Les Mis as a child in the West End, and my dad would pick me up from the show, take me home, and it probably wasn't even that late, but in my mind as a child, a seven-year-old, it was like really late, and we'd go to this restaurant, this Indian restaurant, on our way home, and it was like, oh my god, I'm an adult and I'm eating the best food on like a Tuesday night with my dad, and I've got school tomorrow.
That's adorable.
So I think it was a real celebration, and we'd always eat out as a family, and my mum's great at cooking roast, so I've always loved it, but I didn't switch into really enjoying it until probably early 20s, because uni, I just like eat to survive, you know.
Eat to line your stomach.
Yeah.
You said you're not foodie. I think of you as really foodie. But then I suppose you had your kind of, what do you call it? Like Fitspo years.
Yeah.
Where you probably were less into it because it was more like fuel rather than...
Well, saying that, I think that's where I developed a love for creating recipes, though, because I suddenly had to, with my PCOS diagnosis, suddenly had to switch and kind of shake up my diet a bit from what I was used to eating. I mean, I was the girl at the party who's, and still am, would stand next to the buffet table, you know, and have like 10 cupcakes.
So we would have ultimately met even if it hadn't been through work, because I would have been at the buffet table too.
I still am. Yeah, let's just get that straight. But I think when I had to cook for myself, and I started, you know, looking at food in a different way and thinking, oh, how can I make that taste good, and all those things, I think that's where my love for cooking came. So I already had the love for food, but that's where my love for like, oh, this is actually a really beautiful process of making your own food from scratch. And I'd plan what I was going to make for breakfast the night before I went to sleep, and I'd get so excited about what I was going to cook, and it was always different. I mean, you're usually a different smoothie. But yeah. So I.
Great. You've kind of answered about your earliest food. That's a nice one. This is a bit of a basic question, but it's my favourite question to ask people nonetheless. What would be your death row meal?
It would be a curry. It would be a Sri Lankan curry with all the trimmings.
Any curry in particular?
All.
A little bit of all the different, like the green bean one, the beetroot one.
Yeah, like, you know, when we went to Koh Lamba to eat
buff.
That food, that would be my death row meal. I mean, we had, having been to Sri Lanka, just the most incredible food at a place that I can't remember the name. We stayed there and it was just a whole mix of veggie curries. Yeah, all of that.
Woof.
Woof.
Yeah. Starter pud, drink for the old death row.
Oh, yeah. Got that whole shebang. Starter. Just for curry.
Mm-hmm. Just a little pakora or something.
Yeah. With like some raita and
woof.
Yeah. And then dessert. It would probably be something chocolatey.
That's quite impressive after a curry.
I know, but you know, I'm going in.
Yeah,
I don't have to think about
this is
like,
the last
feeling
one.
Sick.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Or like a bad tummy. I'd have a chocolate. I mean, right now I want something cold and chocolatey. Depends what the temperature's like at the time, I guess.
Yeah.
But maybe a chocolate cheesecake is what I fancy right now.
Delicious.
Or like a dark chocolate mousse, like the one we made for Kate Lister. That's what I want now.
Yeah, great. Love that.
So I'd say that.
What are you washing it all down with?
Maybe a really cold glass of like Sauvignon.
Delish.
Probably doesn't go together, but
no, who cares? It's your last meal. Yeah. You have what you want. Yeah. I might be joining you for this meal. It sounds delicious.
Please come.
Who does most of the cooking at home?
Piers, my partner, would say him. And that's probably true. But I would say it's split quite evenly.
Yeah.
Because when I eat at home, usually I can't be bothered. So I'll just like throw things together and see what happens. Whereas Piers loves to follow recipes and loves to always have something new and delicious. Like, oh, let's make this because we've never tried that before. And I'm more like, what have we got in the fridge? I'm going to throw that in a pan with some garlic and onion and ginger. And that's dinner. You know?
Nice. Yeah, sounds very familiar. Okay, so obviously everybody knows you predominantly as a yoga teacher.
Mm.
And this is very hard to interview someone who you know so well because I feel like I'm asking very obvious questions, but I know the answer. But we're going to talk about things so that the listeners get to know you a little bit better, you and your teaching style and the way you feel about yoga. So you and I have chatted a lot about yoga bodies, I'm doing quote marks, mm-hmm. and making yoga accessible to everyone and making it a very friendly space where you don't feel intimidated going in. So I'd love to hear from you why that's important and how you are going about breaking the mold of what people think a yoga teacher has to be, what a yoga student has to be.
Mm. I think it's a really important thing that we do break the mold, and it's probably the same with kind of any stereotype that we think of or any industry you're in. And I really loved actually Susie last week and how kind of she went down the route of being a tattoo artist just because she wanted to and didn't kind of form that stereotype. And when I first started practicing yoga, it was and perhaps still is a place where you see tiny, tiny people who look a certain way, and you kind of think of yogis, again, quote unquote, to look a certain way. And when I stepped into the role of a teacher, I was met with a lot of negative thoughts in myself that I can't be a yoga teacher because I don't look like these people. I don't look like the people that I step into a studio and see. And I was thinking, so how can my students, how would they respect me if I don't look like that? And it was a really big battle and something I think I've always struggled with and still do struggle with. You know, it's always that conversation that you have with yourself. I'm not good enough, self-doubt, and it comes and goes. But I think it's really important to talk about it so that anyone else who does feel the way I feel can be liberated from their own thoughts as well. And I think it all stems and kind of started with when I was diagnosed with PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, and I was exercising a lot. I was eating really well at the time. Well, actually started to eat better. But my relationship with my body really changed in the way that I was exercising, not to look a certain way, but because I knew that that's what my body needed. That's what my hormones needed and to regulate my blood sugar. So suddenly exercising and strength training, which is what I was doing a lot of the time, became a thing of, I just want to be strong. I want to be able, I want to be capable. I want to live my life and not have to be injured and worry about health conditions later on in my life. And I think I moved that into my yoga practice as well. You know, you look at someone and you can't tell what's going on in them. Like, you can't tell how strong they are or what they've been dealing with, you know, and that is where the yoga lies. It's not about, and we've spoken about this so much, and it's a conversation that we probably will keep having for a long time, but in order to be a yogi and a yoga teacher, whatever that means, really, you do not have to look a certain way. You do not have to do certain things. You don't have to do a handstand. Just because your students might want to do a handstand doesn't mean you have to be able to do it. And it was quite kind of scary stepping into a room full of people that I suddenly thought, am I being judged because I don't look like what they expect me to look like? But when you realize that, yeah, that you're free of that and you can teach to be kind to yourselves, you can teach for compassion and to be a human being, is what I think is the most important thing. And if anyone is judging me because I don't look like I have abs or I don't, fuck it. Then they're not the right student for me, and that's fine. And they can, you know, never come to my class again, and that's wonderful. There will be a teacher out there for them that does what they need, and hopefully one stage in their life they'll come back and move into the quieter practices, move into the stuff that really matters. This is a long answer, but that's where I really think it's important that we stop judging each other on how we look. There is so much more beauty to be found when we let go of that. I feel quite emotional speaking about it, because it's so true. Like, why do we have to? And actually, I was quite triggered this weekend going to the beach and thinking, oh my gosh, I've put on a bit of weight over lockdown, you know, as we all have. How my family see me, are they gonna think I've put on weight? Like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change who we are at all. We can be as kind and funny and loving, and it will not change because of our bodies.
And you can also be, you know, you can have the quote unquote perfect body and be miserable inside.
Exactly.
Or you can have the body that isn't seen as the aesthetic ideal and be super chilled with yourself and love your life and be really content. So I think it's kind of false, isn't it? It doesn't really matter as long as you're happy and healthy.
100%. And I think when we let go of that in our yoga practice as well, and stop practicing for the look of things, and people do, a lot of people I speak to, they say, oh, so I practice for a workout. I think when we stop treating our yoga practice as a workout or as exercise is when we really reap the benefits from it, when we really tune into how we feel, moving to be kind to ourselves. And yeah, we can do all the strength and the mobility to better our future self and to make sure we're taking care of ourselves. But I think it's really important to tune into each moment and how you feel, and that will inevitably be your best practice.
No, I love your approach. I think it's important that there are teachers out there who are, I was going to say preaching what you're preaching, not that you're preaching, but who are sharing the message that you share, because for a lot of people, yoga does start as exercise. And for me, I definitely did get into it as exercise back in the beginning. And actually, I think I probably went to yoga because I had to exercise because I didn't like my body. And through my yoga practice, it wasn't that my body got better and I felt happier. It was that I started to appreciate my body for what it could do rather than for what it looked like. Because when you practice yoga, even if you're not practicing it super intensely, you do get stronger. And it's not that your muscles become more visible. I'm not saying that you get stronger and more toned, but you physically get stronger. You can hold a plank for longer. And it's through that that you start to realize how awesome your body is and the amazing things it can do. And so I think for someone to go on that journey of finding gratitude for their body, to have a teacher like you sharing the message that you're sharing is really, really valuable.
Mm. I mean, this is our home. Our bodies are where we spend all of our time.
You might call it your vessel.
You might call it your vessel. Serena had written in the notes, befriend your vessel.
And Sarah laughed at me, but it is. It's your vessel.
It is a vessel. Yeah. And in Sanskrit, you'd say your kumbha, your pot.
That's cute. You kumbha.
You fill it up and you let go. I had a good point and I lost my train of thought. This is our home. So why would we not want to enjoy our time spent in it rather than worrying about what's on the outside? And if you're a yoga teacher or a yogi, a practicing human being, then know that it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And also, if you step into a class and you think, oh, I can't wear a sports bra because, you know, I've got rolls, or, you know, let it go. Like, you can be as comfortable as you wish. And if people are judging you, that's on them, because your teacher won't. They'll be supporting you the whole time.
Judgment is so often a projection of someone else's internal struggle rather than about you.
Yeah.
Talking about body image then, I'm wondering, and again, I know the answer. It's so weird, like, asking you questions. Talking about body image, I'm wondering how your relationship with your body has been historically. Is yoga something that's really turned that for you to find acceptance and to find gratitude for your vessel? or has that always been something that's come easily to you?
No, definitely not. I think, yeah, and as I say, it's still a constant journey. I still have to remind myself of these things when I get in a bad headspace. And that will probably, I mean, I hope not, but probably be, you know, for the rest of our lives. And I think that's a generation thing as well.
Yeah.
And how, when we were growing up,
Kate Moss was the idol.
Yeah.
Heroin chic.
Yeah. And I would have my massive computer at home, my backdrop, what's it called?
Desktop.
Yeah. But was like a picture of Jessica Alba in like a fit bikini looking tiny. Yeah. I mean, she's an absolute babe. Love Jessica Alba.
What a hun.
But that was what we were supposed to look like. And that's all we ever saw. And even when kind of the start of Instagram, I would only follow like Australian models on Instagram. And it really is like a whole training thing to train yourself to acknowledge that isn't normal. So it really is a constant relationship. And yeah, as a teenager, I was thinking about this the other day, like from a really early age, I was so aware of my body, so aware that my hips were bigger than all my friends, and that what I ate impacted. And I would like go for runs to lose weight. It was always about losing weight. And I said this to Piers, my partner, recently, about how me and my friends, this is awful. If we're so young, would be on MSN, be like, oh my gosh, I've got that feeling where I'm so hungry. And I know that hungry feeling is my fat eating itself. What?
Oh God, I hate this.
I know. Awful.
Because no matter, you can exercise as much as you want, you can eat as little as you want, you cannot change the shape of your body.
No.
Your body's your body.
Yeah.
Acceptance. Yeah. Love it. Be nice to it.
Yeah.
What would you say to someone who is struggling with that?
Oh,
do you have any tips?
I just think, as I said before, you know, your friends are never ever going to judge you on how you look. They really aren't. I would never think to judge my friend if she's put on a bit of weight or looks a bit different. If you can see people for what's deeper, if they're kind, you know, if they make you laugh, that is all that matters. And you have to remind yourself of that. You have to remind yourself that you are more than what society and the media has told us and forced us to believe that we are. And just enjoy life. Like, life is too short to worry about how we look. I actually had a weekend with my best friends recently, and we said to each other, are we going to be worrying about this our whole lives? Like, when we're 40, are we still going to be talking about the same old boring stuff about, oh, got to lose a bit of weight? Please no.
So deeply ingrained.
It is, isn't it?
Growing up with the media and everything telling you you're not good enough, you need more, you need to be smoother, tighter, slimmer, more tanned.
Yeah.
It's deep, deep conditioning. So yeah, I think sadly it does take time to unravel that.
It is. I think, yeah, appreciate now, because you're always going to look back, like in 5 years' time, you're always going to look at yourself and think, I look fucking great. Like, why did I not appreciate what I had then? So just enjoy yourself. There's no point in wasting your time.
Luckily, there are some brilliant yoga teachers and coaches out there who can help you with this sort of thing. There's some really, exactly. really good ones. Highly recommend Sarah and Serena.
But I mean, it's true. And we both do this work because it's a lived experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's something that we both have to remind ourselves, as I'm sure so many people our age, younger, older, you know, there is more to life. Let's go and experience it and enjoy it.
And remind each other.
And remind each other as well. Yeah, absolutely, Serena.
Do you know, if you're worried about judgment from other people, my favourite quote I heard the other day, those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind.
Mm.
Love that.
Mm.
It's so good, isn't it?
It is a great one.
So you talked about your body, your vessel being your home, and that is a lovely little segue for you to tell us about At Home.
Yeah,
because I think that the name is so poignant. Like, firstly, that At Home was born out of lockdown and you were physically at home, people were practicing at home for the first time, but I'm also assuming that At Home is about coming home to yourself and being comfortable in your body.
Yeah, you've got it right.
Yes, nailed it.
Yeah, and it's funny. So this is my listeners, this is my online member space, my yoga space online. And you're so right, Serena, it was born out of lockdown, as so many things have been over the last year. So many things have shifted and changed. And I knew that I wanted to create this space, because teaching online for me in the past year has been such a tonic. It has helped me physically, mentally, emotionally so much to show up for people, but also to connect with all these other incredible humans all over the world. That has been, and I've said this before in the podcast, like top notch, top dog. And when I was toying with the idea of what shall I call my member space, and I was writing loads of things down, and I just wrote down At Home, and it then became At Home with Sarah. And I just thought, that is it. That works. That is everything. It says everything about it. You're at home, maybe physically, but you know, as we move into the world, perhaps you're traveling whilst you're doing this, but wherever you are going, you are coming home to yourself. You are tuning in with yourself. You are checking in with yourself. And of course, there are practices on there that are, you know, different body areas and kind of working into that way, working into mobility. But it all boils down to this idea of coming home, and that we can feel at home no matter where we go. And if we're kind of returning to work and we're on the tube and we're rushing and stressing, and there's anxiety, as there is with this time, I know I felt it massively, to be able to put on a meditation in the At Home with Sarah library and know that, I can close my eyes and I can tune in and I can settle myself. How do I feel? And you can take that anywhere. What a gift it is. Not my gift, but you know, you have this whole internal landscape within you. There is so much that we can tune into and uncover and notice within ourselves. And that happens when we close our eyes and we tune into our breath, when we access ourselves. So yeah, that's where it was born out of, and it has been so great. It has, I mean, obviously with anything, it's been challenging, setting it up and learning how to do techie things, which I'm not good at. And as we're both terrible at plugging our own things, you know, it's hard to do your own marketing, and you have to have so many hats on when you're starting a business. You have to be absolutely everything. And you've spoken to Serena about this on social media recently about, you know, you have to be a copywriter, you have to be a marketing manager, you have to be great at social graphics. And then you also have to lead the practices and get the members. But something recently, when I was actually practicing, I was on a training with Michael James Wong, who's a recent guest, brilliant guest on the podcast. And I was really trying to force the At Home with Sarah platform. My partner is very business minded, and I love him for that because it really pushes me into that, because I'm not like that at all. And I was really struggling with it when we kind of first launched, thinking, oh, need more people. Must make this like as big as I can, you know, push. And Michael drew me a card in I've forgotten the name of it.
Tarot.
And it was about sustenance. And it the card just read sustenance. It was a picture of Ganesh on the front. So it wasn't a tarot, it was a yogi version. And I sat with that and I meditated with it, and I suddenly thought, like, oh, I've got what I need. So I'm going to appreciate all the members I have, appreciate the space that I've created, because I haven't fully pat myself on the back for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's big stuff that
it's
we
so
do.
Important.
And just sit and be like, I'm going to sustain this. I'm going to sustain and be grateful for everyone I've got on there. And yeah, it's now feels like I can just love and let it grow and nourish, and who knows where it will go. But I'm really glad I started it and founded it, and it's just the start. So that's At Home with Sarah.
Flowing, not forcing. Yes. I love it because it makes me think of that gorgeous song, Home is Wherever I'm With You.
Oh yeah.
Oh, home.
Yeah.
And it's like singing that to yourself.
Yeah.
Maybe I should put that in.
Maybe you should though. Maybe we should sing it and record it.
Okay, fab. So obviously we'll share the details to At Home in the show notes so everyone can find you nice and easily.
And yeah, just a note on At Home with Sarah. You can, if you don't want to become a member, and that's absolutely fine, you know, life gets in the way. I've made it really affordable, but if that isn't your thing, then you can check in with the on-demand practices and kind of flow as you go.
Oh, I love that. Flow as you go.
Yeah, maybe I should put that in
as well.
That's
so snappy.
Hi. Are you a coach?
That's awesome. We've obviously talked a bit about your style as a teacher in terms of your focus around body image and things. But I think it's also worth saying that you are, as a teacher, incredibly welcoming and approachable and fun and friendly. And I think that's really lovely when a lot of yoga does feel quite serious and quite formal and quite rigid, I guess.
Mm.
So that's not really a question. That's more just me telling people in case they've not been to your classes. So anybody who even vaguely knows that your favorite thing to talk about in the world is periods.
Yes.
And obviously, I guess like your struggle with PCS was kind of, PCOS was kind of your intro to the whole holistic health world, right?
Mm.
So I'm wondering, how has your connection to your cycle and your knowledge of your cycle changed your relationship with yourself and your body?
A great one. I think the same thing, you know, when we were growing up, periods were, oh my gosh, we do not speak about them. We can't tell the men in our lives, you know, no one can know that we're on our period. You just have to rush to the toilet with a tampon in your hand, like clutched in you. And when I lost my period with PCOS, suddenly it was like a massive thing. And my goal was to get my period back. And was it Vianney that said at the beginning of this season that is one of your vital signs, mm-hmm. that you are healthy, having a healthy period? And through this podcast and knowledge, soaking up the knowledge from our amazing guests and from apps like Moody that both you and I, Serena, are practitioners on, I've just been learning so much about honoring my cycle, trusting my cycle, and how beautiful it is. Like, it is such a wonderful thing. And I would never shy away from telling a man that I was on my period. I think it is a conversation that everyone should just be having in the open. Like, my dad is always very aware on my period. He knows when I have struggles. Same with my partner. Like, he is supportive. And I think, yeah, it's just so odd that we shy away from it. It's so very odd, isn't it? So I think, noticing, tracking my cycle and noticing where I do feel more stressed, more anxious, that should be reflected in my life. And I will, try and sync to my cycle as much as I can. So next week, for example, I know that I'm going to be a little bit more anxious. Mm-hmm. So can I give myself more kindness and compassion in that week and rest a little more and remind myself I'm feeling this way because my hormones are doing wild things in my body, and that is completely natural. And then in the times where I'm feeling more creative, in my ovulation phase, then I can plan to film all of my At Home with Sarah stuff then, when I know I'll have more energy, when I know that, yeah, I'm going to feel more creative in my teaching. It's so funny, actually, because I really notice where I am in my cycle when I'm teaching yoga. Why have I forgotten all of the phases? Why I've forgotten all of their phases? Luteal phase, is that pre?
I just call them seasonal. I like the wild power school of thought around it. So I think for me, it's much easier to remember them in terms of the seasons rather than scientific hormonal.
So in my winter,
yeah,
my luteal phase, pre-period, I know that I won't be able to come up with creative flow. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, my brain physically can't create that. And so I know I'm going to teach something simple and my words will probably be jumbled, but can I give myself credit? You know, I'm a human being. And I know that in my spring, summer, yeah, I'm going to nail the creative dynamic flows and it's going to be cool. I'm going to have that in the bag. But yeah, so I think, does that answer the question?
Completely. And knowledge really is power with that, because it's easy to beat yourself up for not feeling super creative or for feeling a bit low energy or feeling a bit anxious. But if you know why it's happening, because you recognize where you are in your cycle, that allows you to be more compassionate and more understanding of yourself.
Mm.
Maybe we should play a game where people who come to your yoga classes have to guess at the end of the class where you are in your cycle.
That'd be horrible.
Based on how dynamic the class was or how creative you had been. They'll be like, yeah, yeah, cool class. Thanks, Sarah. Yeah. Day 17. Great.
Because I often get questions from students who have come to my class or their yoga teachers, and they say, wow, I love how creative your classes are. And I say to them, they're not always. Like, you've just come in a creative week. Sometimes they're super simple because honestly, that's all I can manage. Mm-hmm. And there's still beauty in those simple flows. We still need those simple flows.
Of course. Yeah. Sometimes that will be exactly what the people who are coming need rather than the creative, fancy, juicy.
Yeah.
So no, that's awesome. You mentioned anxiety in relation to your cycle. And I feel like anxiety is actually something you talk quite a lot about on Instagram. How much does that affect you? To what extent? And how do you support yourself when you are having a bit of an anxious patch?
I do like to talk about this really openly on Instagram. Because it's pretty weird. I feel like I have a strange relationship with Instagram where if I'm not really honest with how I'm feeling, then I feel like I'm lying to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm being really, dishonest with what I'm posting. And anytime I do post that I'm having a troubled time, then the feedback from others saying thank you because I'm feeling the same way, I think that's why I post it as well, because if I'm feeling shit, And suddenly I see everything on Instagram that's like, happy, I'm doing all these things. Oh my gosh, I'm everywhere. Look how much fun I'm having. And I think, oh, am I the only one feeling like this? Mm-hmm. And you know that you're not. But when you see, oh, someone else is feeling a bit shit. And I think Fern Cotton is actually someone who's really, really lovely to follow because she is always honest on her Instagram.
Yeah.
And, you know, she'll post a picture of her crying and you think, oh, thank you, because I was feeling the exact same way. And you are this wonderful, successful woman. If you're feeling this way, you know,
it helps to normalize it for everyone else.
Yeah.
And makes people, I guess, feel less alone if they are going through it.
Yeah. And just a reminder that we, again, we're humans. We, there's no need to be happy all the time. Like, that is not normal. And yeah, we put too much pressure on ourselves to do that. But tools that I have, I think, are to slow down and blah, 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 you know,
yoga
record. But actually, I think I probably shy away from a yoga practice when I'm feeling anxious.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think
I put too much pressure on myself, and I'd rather sit and take myself out for a walk or sit and do some meditation. And my healthy habit, which, should I say it out there now?
If you're ready, do you want to do more anxiety or into your healthy habit?
No, well, it's a tool for me. So,
okay, great. Do it.
Yeah. Because I know where this podcast goes, and I know that healthy habit is next. So my healthy habit, and it's something that I have been doing for the past 3-4 months, and I feel has really changed the game for me when I was experiencing really bad insomnia. Was a daily meditation. I know that sounds, you know, we have that all the time, and I think that meditation is something recently I've really connected with. I've practiced bits and bobs over the last few years, but recently, and having done my training with Michael on quiet practice and meditation, I suddenly felt like, wow, I've got access to this and I know what to do in my body. And the practice that I've been doing daily is a breathing technique, a breathing practice. And it's very simple, but allows me some structure to know how I'm feeling. Is I very simply close my eyes, notice my breath, be a witness to myself, and that will change every single day where I'm at.
Of course.
And I will, yeah, notice my breath, how I'm breathing, and then do a simple breath ratio of breathing in slowly for 4, pausing for 1, exhale slowly for 4, pausing for 1. I do that 4 times and I count it on my hand so I know where I'm at.
So I was laughing when you sent me this, because when it said, Sarah sent me her healthy habit, and it said 4-1, 4-1, and then 6-1, 6-1. And I was like, breathe in for 4, out for 1. Breathe in for 4, out for 1. And then breathe in for 6, out for 1. And I was like, wow, this doesn't sound super relaxing. This sounds quite intense. Like panting in the mirror.
I was trying to explain it to you as in simple way, and I just thought, I'll write ratios.
No, you're doing it great verbally. Keep going, yeah, verbally.
Okay. So it's in for 4, pause for 1, out for 4, pause for 1. That 4 times, and I count that on my hand so I know where I'm at, so I don't lose track. And then I move up to 6, inhale for 6, pause for 1, exhale for 6, pause for 1, do that 4 times. Then do inhale for 8, pause for 2, exhale for 8, pause for 2, do that 4 times. And then you work back down. So it's like a pyramid. You're going all the way up, expanding the breath, and then coming back down. And I was practicing that with a round of 8, but I just thought, life's getting in the way, I'm going to do this and commit to this 4-4-4-4-4. And it's quite overwhelming how easily I can switch and move into, you know, if I'm feeling really anxious, really stressed, I think I'm going to give myself 10 minutes, and that, sometimes it's less than that, 10 minutes to do this. And afterwards, I physically have shifted. I did it this morning. I told myself I was going to get up and do a workout before I came to you, Serena. And I feel really tired. So I sat on my mat and then I just did this instead. And that's all I needed. It was like a work in rather than a workout, you know? And it's just a really lovely tool that I've been doing. And I think especially on the times of my cycle when I'm feeling super anxious, making sure I do that is brilliant.
Nice. I love that. I'm really glad you've explained it to me, because now I can do it properly rather than like doing some crazy panting like a thirsty dog. No, that's awesome. It's lovely. And like, obviously we've chatted to James Dowler. We've had whole episodes on breathwork, and I think the breath is so important and so incredible. And it's this free tool that is portable and it's always within you, and you can do it on the bus, you can do it anywhere. And so that's lovely. Sarah, you did actually mention, though, you told me another healthy habit.
Oh, yes. I said cycling. And it's something I don't always do. Mm-hmm. It's not a daily thing. Like, I have to get out. But cycling is such... I mean, I'll never regret cycling anywhere. It is so nice. Even when I'm in the rain and it's windy, I find it so freeing. And where I live in Stoke Newington, there's lots of cycle paths. It's very safe. The roads are always empty. And I kind of, and I've said this before, I might have said it on the podcast, I kind of think it's a bit like skiing. In the way that you can just like let yourself go. The wind's going through your hair and you can just appreciate things and look around. And it's a really mindful experience. And it shifts away from like traveling on the bus when you're on your phone and you're like getting your emails done, or on the tube and you're rushing and you're doing all this other stuff. Whereas when you're cycling, you're there, you're present. You're not doing anything else apart from cycling. And yeah, I just bloody love it. I'm so grateful that I have a bike and able to cycle around. I think it's a really lovely thing.
Good for the board, good for the environment.
Exactly.
Good for the vessel.
Good for the vessel.
But also you're right. I think it's funny, isn't it? Often if you get on the tube to go somewhere, and we're quite jammy because we don't commute.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that anymore. When you arrive somewhere and you've been in someone's sweaty armpit the whole way there, you arrive in a grump, people are pushing. If you cycle somewhere, sure, you might be a bit sweaty when you get there.
Yeah.
But you're happy.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. And yeah, not that much sweaty though, sweatier to be honest.
Because, I'm quite a sweaty pig.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So the wind's going in your
helmet, hopefully not your hair. Wind in your helmet.
Wind on your body. You beat the traffic, beat the bus.
Yeah, it's often quicker.
Always. Mm. I have this weird thing where whenever I got my bike, I imagine myself when I started and if I was walking, and I think, oh, how far would I have got if I was walking? God, I'd be like all the way back there. You know? Like, wow, I'm so jammy. I'm so fast on my bike.
You say that. I used to love walking everywhere, and then I started cycling and I was like, why would you walk? It's so slow.
Yeah,
walking exactly, is so slow.
Exactly. Yeah. So get on bikes. Well done, bicycles. Thank you.
Love that. So double healthy habit, cycling and breathing.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Beautiful. There was one more question I wanted to ask you. If you couldn't do what you were doing now, if the world was your oyster, I mean, the world is your oyster, but if you could do literally anything with your life that you wanted other than what you do, as in like, go follow your wildest dreams, what would you do?
What's coming to mind right now, maybe it's because I'm sweating from the back of my knees, is, I don't know, go and live somewhere beautiful and be like paddleboard instructor.
I was just thinking scuba instructor, yeah, in Bali.
Yeah, yes. Something in the water, in the ocean, because I absolutely love the sea so much.
Okay, where would you do it?
I don't know. Maybe, I mean, I'd like to go somewhere that I haven't been before, so I don't know. Somewhere,
so nowhere
nice
in particular, no. Somewhere warm.
Yeah. I'm always reminded, actually, one time when I was in Australia, I stayed with some friends and they had a jetty and little hut thing, and they had paddle boards. That was like their little side business. And we went, had a barbecue there, and then went out on the paddle boards, and there were like stingrays in the water, and it was the most idyllic little town and experience. And I thought, this is the life.
Mm-hmm.
How lush.
Yeah, epic. And then followed by a couple of cold beers on the beach, quick barbecue.
Yeah.
Oh.
Please
get me a holiday. Please. Right now.
I know.
Oh, that sounds so good. Well, Sarah Malcolm, thank you so much for taking the time to be a guest on your own podcast. It has been a pleasure to interview you.
Serena, the pleasure is all mine. I feel quite like overwhelmed by being on such an esteemed podcast.
Hopefully the numbers don't drop this week, the listening numbers.
We can wrap this straight up since I know what to do.
Yeah, do it. Would you like to take us home?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. That's take us at home.
Yeah.
That sounds weird.
Bring us home.
Bring us home, Sarah. Mm.
Thank you, listeners, for listening to this episode, listening to me ramble on. Real pleasure to be on, Serena. And I'm not gonna say what I enjoyed. I'm not gonna say I enjoyed this that I said.
No.
But if you would all like to enjoy the recipe that Serena has lovingly made, the incredible burger, the banging burger, then you can find it on our Instagram at Kitchen Club Podcast, where you will see lots of other beautiful things on there. And yeah, you can find out more details about At Home with Sarah and my teachings in the show notes below.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And if you enjoyed this, please do share a little screenshot on your Instagram stories, spread the word, get everyone listening to Sarah. And we will see you next week for, surprise, surprise, I'll give you three guesses who the next guest is going to be. Dun, dun, dun. And I'm not going to tell you.
Wait.
It's a surprise.
That was an awkward end.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Thanks, Sarah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.